Welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a program dedicated to informing you about organizations that serve our community and how you can get involved with them. Here's your host, Chris Evans.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on the Upstate. My name is Chris Evans. Today, my guests are Kayla Moore, the Women's Program Manager at Miracle Hill in Spartanburg, the Spartanburg location of Miracle Hill, because you guys are all over the Upstate.
Correct.
And Ryan Dirk is the next voice that you hear, President and CEO of Miracle Hill Ministries here in the Upstate. Welcome and good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having
us. It's my pleasure. Always my pleasure to have Miracle Hill. You might be one of my most frequent guests, which is nice. It's nice to have people coming back again and again. Although I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first time I've had you, Ryan, as the president and CEO. How long have you been with Miracle Hill?
So I've been with Miracle Hill for about 13 years. I've been in this new role since January 1st of this year.
Wow. Okay. So just brand new, really, as
brand new as
president and CEO.
Trial by fire.
You know, normally the first question that I would ask is, what do you do and who do you do it for? I'm gonna take a risk. You know what? Let's do that anyway. Let's stick with the formula. Tell us about Miracle Hill. What do you do and who do you do it for, Ryan?
So Miracle Hill Ministries is the largest provider of homeless services in the upstate of South Carolina. So spread throughout the entire upstate, we have four rescue missions, several addiction recovery programs. We have some residential homes for children, foster care, 8 thrift stores. You know, we have a saying at Miracle Hill that if you can't find a friend in the world, you can find one here. And that's what we try to do for the upstate. For those that are in need of a friend, in need of a warm place to stay, we try to be that person who puts their hand out and helps them up.
Well put. Very well put. As you would expect from the president and CEO. Now, and I'm curious about your position. What was it, since you're so new here, what was it that led to you becoming the new president of Miracle Hill Ministries?
Well, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version.
That's fine.
I first walked into the front doors of the Greenville Rescue Mission as a guest with a trash bag full of clothes.
No kidding.
And an addiction in need of a friend. And so I found that friend, and a really long story short, eventually was called into the ministry, went to work for Miracle Hill in our food warehouse, and then became a counselor with our addiction recovery program, and then was a program manager there, and then a director, and then the vice president of adult ministries, and lo and behold, here we are today.
That is a fantastic story. I frankly wish you hadn't cut it so short, because I'm sure that there are very many interesting twists and turns in there. But that is spectacular. Well done. Congratulations on not just on your position, but on having recovered.
And
Miracle Hill was a big part of that.
Yeah, Miracle Hill was certainly a friend when I needed one the most. They were good enough to give me a place to stay and to meet me in my brokenness and in my wounds, and help me out of the pit that I had dug in my own life, teach me how to live life, eventually helped me to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, and went back to school and got some education, met an amazing woman, got married. And just have this amazing career where every day I get paid money to watch God at work at Miracle Hill. It's a really cool
this
job.
That's wonderful. What a testimony. What a fantastic story. That's spectacular. I couldn't ask for a better story just to start this program off. So let's talk about Miracle Hill. Kayla, tell us about the women's program that you manage.
So at the mission on my side, I can hold 30 ladies.
Okay.
Which isn't putting a dent in the population for the homeless. But we hold 20 single ladies, and then I have a dorm for my mommies with kiddos, 10 for them.
Okay. And I should specify that we are kind of focusing on Miracle Hill Spartanburg. Usually when I have guests in here, it's not necessarily by design, but more by coincidence. A lot of them are Greenville-based. And so this program almost becomes focus on Greenville, and I don't want it to be that. It's focus on the upstate. The upstate is a big place, and certainly Greenville is a hub of the upstate, so to speak, where a lot of things kind of happen and are centrally located. But it's certainly not the only part of the upstate. And Miracle Hill, as an organization, spans the upstate. How many locations do you have around the upstate, Ryan?
So we have 4 shelters in the upstate, 1 in Spartanburg, 2 in Greenville, 1 for men, 1 for women, 1 in Cherokee County. And then we have the 2 addiction recovery programs, which are based in Greenville as
right.
well. Our children's programs are based in Greenville and Pickens. And
okay.
then foster care is throughout the upstate in all of the different counties that we serve.
Gotcha. So, again, running the gamut of the upstate. Right now and today we're focusing primarily on the Spartanburg missions because, as I recall, there was, and I don't know if you're the one that sent this out or really where it came from, but there was a request a few weeks ago for some help that you guys needed specifically at the Spartanburg Mission.
Yes. So with the cold weather.
Yes.
Oh, man, the numbers have escalated. You used to see about, I'd say, maybe 30 to 35 men, and now we're looking at 50 to 60 men coming. And the ladies, too, you would only see 2 to 3 ladies that would need to check into the cold weather shelter. And now that number is probably about 15 every night that we're open.
Wow.
And you put that on top of the 96
sure.
that we already have at the mission. So, and we feed 3 times a day. So we need blanket, I mean, toiletry items, everything that you use at your house. We need it at our big house. Same thing. So definitely a need for that. We always have a need for volunteers, mentors. I don't think people realize how important that is. Like with Ryan's story, I'm sure his support system had a lot to do with his success. We need people to come in and walk with these men and ladies on this journey. That's definitely a need.
Well, that's fantastic. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, Chris, let me unpack what cold weather shelter is.
Please.
So we have these residential shelters where individuals can come in. They actually check into the mission. And depending on what they want in their life, they'll stay there anywhere from a few days to a few months to work on their issues. On top of that, we have a commitment to the upstate that anytime the temperature drops 40 degrees or below, or 43 degrees when it's snowing outside, anytime the temperature drops, that we won't turn anyone away. So we have overflow shelters in all of our residential rescue missions. So in the Spartanburg rescue mission, there's basically about 100 beds for people who want to actually check into the mission. But when the temperature drops in the evenings, a line forms behind the rescue mission. And these are individuals that may not want our help, may want to be on the streets. But when the temperature turns cold, it becomes an issue of life and safety. And so our shelters get overflow beds. And as Kayla's pointing out, those numbers continue to climb to where we used to see maybe a couple of dozen who would come into the Spartanburg Rescue Mission in addition to the regular beds. And on really cold nights last year, we saw an additional 100 individuals checking into cold weather shelter. And so that is a huge strain on our staff, on our supplies. As you can imagine, that means more food, more showers, more towels, more soap is needed as we try to make sure everyone stays safe and warm on those cold nights.
Well, and that's certainly a concern when it gets cold outside. And also, I know that you have hot weather shelters in the summer when it gets very, very hot outside. And, you know, there's, again, that threat, that health threat that the weather poses. Right now, obviously, being in the winter, we've had some recent winter weather. We potentially have more on the way. And those kinds of things really make it dangerous. It's easy to imagine that nobody wants to be homeless. And that's certainly the case. When it gets uncomfortably cold or hot outside, more people are going to come to the shelters. And yet we seem to have experienced here in the upstate, and especially in the Greenville area, a surge of homelessness that people have been researching. It almost seems, I mean, we've heard about tent cities in Greenville. People will see panhandlers and you know, things that have signs that say they don't have a place to live. You know, any donation you can make would help, things like that. There is a sense, to a degree, and I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but there's a sense that some people are choosing this kind of a life. Is that true?
So let me unpack some facts for you.
Okay.
So last year, for the first time in the upstate, a state of homelessness was created with relatively good data. So annually, typically the number that people use is the PIC count, the point in time count that is a federally mandated count by HUD that happens. Well, last year we had a much more inclusive data source for a state of homelessness. So in 2000,
just a more thorough study?
More thorough study, more data.
Gotcha.
More people contributed to the data.
Gotcha.
So for 2018, 3,600 individuals entered or exited homelessness. Individuals. Some of those individuals will enter and exit different service providers many, many, many times. So we're talking about individuals.
I see. So they come and go through
that come and go through
the
different
status.
The different service providers, shelters, other arenas where people are trying to help. So does that number mean that there are more homeless people in the upstate or people experiencing homelessness than ever before? Well, are certainly the upstate's growing. And so, yes, there is an incremental tick up in individuals who are experiencing homelessness in the upstate. The million-dollar question is, why does it appear that there are more people? Well, as the upstate grows, as we continue to build and we eliminate affordable housing, mm-hmm. we eliminate other opportunities for people, it's not that we need more shelter beds in the upstate. There's plenty of shelter beds. We need more shelter exits. So what that means is, as people are coming through our shelters and they're getting jobs, they're becoming stabilized, they have support networks, the next step is for them to move out, whether it is into an affordable apartment or a transitional home or a single room occupancy unit. But there frankly is not those places for them to move. So right now, this moment in time, there's probably 150 individuals in our four rescue missions that fit that bill. They have jobs, they're stable, they're in recovery, they've stabilized their recovery, and they're ready for the next step, and there's just not anywhere for them to go, which is creating a bottleneck in the shelters. Okay, so there are people that are waiting to get into the shelters, and as a result, their life is continuing to unravel. And so we've got to look at this as a full spectrum of needs for somebody who's experiencing homelessness. When you're talking about issues of poverty, it's not just get someone a job and their life is fixed, right? So
Well, and that's something that I've always enjoyed about Miracle Hill is that you guys seem to you have different programs to address different aspects of what seem like a larger problem. One thing that I've talked about with other Miracle Hill guests before is that homelessness is not necessarily a problem in and of itself. I mean, it is a problem in and of itself, but it's not a lone problem by itself. It's exacerbated by things like poverty, things like drug addiction, where if you don't have a job and you don't have an income, it's difficult to keep your house. And so you may lose your house or your home, however you're living. You may be evicted. If you have an addiction problem, then it may be more difficult to keep a job, which means you're more likely to lose your house. So there's this sort of vicious cycle that Miracle Hill, among organizations, seems to be addressing more than one aspect of.
Right. So there's a book written years ago by Tim Keller called Ministries of Mercy, and he talks about this dilemma that there are really two different ways at looking at homelessness or poverty. So on one side of the argument, people will say, well, it's a systems problem. There's broken pieces in our system that are creating these broken lives. The other side of the argument says that, well, these are individuals who are making poor choices. Mm. And so at Miracle Hill, if you asked us which one is right, we would say yes.
Yes.
It is some combination, sure. Right? So each individual that comes into our shelters or our programs is an individual with their own story and their own facts about their life that have led them to a point where they're reaching out for assistance. The complicating issue is once you get to that moment in time that you're checking into a rescue mission, it's not a simple solution, right? There's probably trauma that is associated with that that will require some counseling. On top of that, we might need some job skills training. There might be medical issues that need to be dealt with. So we're trying to look at each individual as an individual and help them figure out what they need to improve or change or address in their own life to work their way out of the situation they find themselves in.
You mentioned medical issues that might be a problem regarding maintaining a home. One of the things that we've heard more and more about recently are mental health issues and how, again, like I was saying, that may affect different aspects of your life in terms of finding and or keeping a job, becoming or remaining addicted to drugs, maintaining a residence, things like that. How is Miracle Hill addressing mental health in terms of homelessness?
I could chime in on that
one. Please do, Kayla.
Because we do partner with the local mental health organizations, and that's really a huge piece. And that goes back to the good point you made, Chris, about are people, when they come in wanting to stay at homelessness, I think one of the biggest myths that we have to address is that homeless people are lazy. I can't speak for every homeless person that comes through the doors, but as Ryan hit on, they show up at Miracle Hill and we dive in and help them in the area that they need help on. And what I've seen in this role, and I've only been at the mission for about 6 months now. Before that, I worked at our addiction center, renewal center. But one of the things that I'm seeing is it's not that hard for my ladies to find employment. And I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And they're not even having to take minimum wage jobs. There's a lot of factory jobs. They dive in making $14, $15, $16 an hour. So when we come and help them with how to budget this money and let's not blow it all on cigarettes, so then they're able to exit the mission with some money in the bank, but I need some place to send them.
Right.
So I just wanted to make sure we hit on that.
No, that's good.
That these men and ladies, I don't want to leave the men out.
Sure.
The men and ladies, they
well,
come in and they want to turn it around.
Manager, yeah, you would be focused. That's okay. We don't feel excluded. But
okay. So, yeah. And the mental health is a big need. There is a lady right now at the mission. Beautiful story. This lady, she came in and she was actually staying in our cold weather shelter.
Uh-huh.
She looked disheveled. She shared with me about the voices that she was hearing in her head. And she's in her 50s. So when she was coming up, doctors didn't know to tell her she was schizophrenic. They were misdiagnosing her. So now that she has her medication, I'm telling you, I'm seeing a completely different woman. Organized, determined, motivated. You hear people say, Lord, I thank you that I have a sound mind and I'm going to get choked up because when she says it, it comes from a different place.
Yeah.
To have a sound mind, to be able to be in connection with Jesus. And it's one thing when you're homeless. Can you imagine being homeless and schizophrenic? Can you imagine being homeless, schizophrenic, no support system? Let me throw one more at you. Can you imagine being homeless, schizophrenic, no support system, and I don't know Jesus?
It's tough to imagine. And you mentioned the sort of stereotypical view that homeless people are lazy, which has always seemed to me to be kind of a facile argument, you know, that it's dismissive of any other issues that might be causing the problem.
Exactly. And one of the things that I learned, again, since I'm new in this role, is coming up, you do see people with the signs and you're told, give them some money. And that's what I've always done. Mm-hmm. And then I go to these trainings and they say, that's the worst thing you can do. We need to reach out with resources. Money isn't helping.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Well, because they've been getting money and they're still standing on the
exactly,
corner.
Exactly. So same thing, like I said, when I worked at Miracle Hill Renewal Center, I just thought, why don't addicts just put it down? My father struggles with alcoholism. So in our minds, it's, well, just stop doing it.
It's, yes.
It's not that easy.
When you are outside of the position, it's very easy to see a solution that doesn't necessarily work when you're on the other side.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Yes, sir.
That's fascinating. Now, Ryan, you mentioned the exits from the shelters, and I think that's an interesting concept. And one of the big problems is a dearth of affordable housing. Like Miracle Hill, I've talked to a number of organizations that address homelessness. I've talked to a number of organizations that, in one way or another, provide affordable housing. What is it that's keeping the affordable housing from being available? Is it all occupied, or are we just not building enough? What's the issue there?
That's the million-dollar question.
Okay.
Isn't it?
Well, I'm glad I found it.
So the first thing that we need to do is make sure we're using the same terms. So when we're talking about affordable housing, when you generally see that word in the news, people are talking about housing that is somewhere between 70 and 80% of the adjusted median income for the upstate, right? So they're talking about people who make, let's say, $35,000, $40,000 a year, what they can afford. When I'm talking about affordable housing, I'm talking about people who make $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 a year.
Which is a vastly different.
It is a vastly different conversation. Yeah. And so right now, we're experiencing this amazing growth in the upstate. I mean, that's just awesome. But what's happening is you see a lot of neighborhoods that are traditionally low income that are being renovated and turned into different types of housing. And then so when you look at it from a systematic perspective, if you're a builder, a contractor, let's say, and you want to build affordable housing, can you build housing affordably? Well, the answer is no, right? So the house for a cost is the house for a cost, whether you've got good intentions on that house or not. So this is a huge issue for the upstate. The issue is not getting any better, but there's a lot of groups that are facing it and looking at it. But affordable housing is just one piece of the exit puzzle, right? So some people, you know, they get to the edge of the shelter or the program that they're in and they're ready for the next step, but they're not ready to be completely outside of the safety net of support that they're in. So they may benefit from transitional housing, which is, you know, a very affordable choice for people to kind of live together in a house, still have some accountability, still have some support network surrounding them as they continue to save, maybe continue to get more job skills so they can get a better paying job and they move up. There's also some in our society, when we go back to the mental health issue, you know, there's individuals that live in our shelters currently that no matter how much support we put around them, they're probably never going to get to a place where they can successfully live independently.
Yeah.
Right? So what do you do for that person? Well, there's a couple options. You can do some permanent supportive housing, which means housing designated for somebody to live in based on the amount of money they get in disability that is surrounded with support. Or you can do single room occupancy units, which are basically efficiency apartments that somebody would live in long term, but that continues to have support. So we need a lot of different options, not just affordable housing, to continue to influence that exit strategy.
When people hear these stories and they hear these needs that exist and they are touched and want to get involved, how can they help best? How can people get involved by donating either their money or their time?
Right. So, you know, Kayla talked about the panhandler on the corner. So we believe that the best way to influence someone's life is through relationship. And offering somebody cash is not going to necessarily fix the problem. So right now, as we're recording this, we're a couple hundred yards from one of the busiest intersections, yep. You know, 385 exiting onto Woodruff Road, and there's almost always a panhandler yes. out there. So what the public needs to know is every week there are outreach workers talking to those individuals, trying to talk them into a shelter, talk them into some other outcome other than living in the woods and panhandling on the corner. They're not willing to take those resources that are given to them. So for those that might feel burdened to help that individual, you can do one of two things. You can either partner with an organization that is helping people experiencing homelessness. So we're the professionals at helping individuals experiencing homelessness, and we need thousands of volunteer hours every year. We need mentors who will come alongside individuals exiting homelessness or exiting addiction recovery and walk with them as they try to re-enter into the general society. The second thing you can do is stop and talk to someone, right? Whether someone's experiencing homelessness or not, they're a human being with great value and they deserve our time.
Yeah.
They're not, it is not that we get to serve them because we are better than them. It's that we have value and they have value and we meet them where they are and enter into a relationship with them. So at Miracle Hill, our little symbol is a guy helping a guy up, right? We want to give somebody a hand up, not just a handout. So I would encourage people to get involved, whether that's with Miracle Hill or another organization that does work like we do. And if you're interested in that, you can go to miraclehill.org, and there's a whole section devoted to volunteers, and we can get you plugged in.
I was going to ask, miraclehill.org is the website where people can go find volunteer opportunities, presumably in their areas. They don't necessarily have to come to, you know, the one of the rescue missions, but they can find something to do where they are.
Right. We're spread throughout the upstate of South Carolina. So if you go on that website, you might be a little overwhelmed at all the volunteer opportunities that we have. But we have volunteer opportunities in all of our facilities, in our administrative offices, projects that happen on the weekends. If you have a skill that can be useful, we'd love for you to come share your skill with us and with the individuals that we get to serve every week.
Gotcha. And I'm sure there are also opportunities on the website, miraclehill.org, to make monetary donations or material donations.
Absolutely. There's a big donate button, and we certainly covet and are thankful for the donations that come in every week.
One thing that I want to make sure that we mention before we finish, because we're almost out of time here, you've got a note here about Miracle Hill YouTube channel.
Right. So we have a YouTube channel. And so Kayla shared this short story about this amazing woman that that she's getting to serve at the rescue mission in Spartanburg. But if you go on our YouTube channel, you can certainly stay up to date with what's going on at Miracle Hill. But we have this whole series called Stories of Rescue, where we focus on someone, whether it's in our shelter, in foster care, in any of the branches of ministry that we get to serve, and we get to tell their story in about 3 to 5 minutes. and they are amazing stories. So if you get nothing else out of this time that we've had to do this interview, please go to our YouTube channel, check out our stories of rescue, and see the awesome things that God's doing at Miracle Hill.
Is your story up there?
My story is not a story of rescue, but it is on the YouTube channel.
Okay. I really am impressed by that story. And I'm certain that the other stories that are up there are just as impressive.
They are. Again, we get the awesome opportunity to serve our fellow man and woman, as Gail put it. And we get to share in those stories. So yes, please go check them out.
Thank you very much. MiracleHill.org is how you can find that information for volunteering, donating, and finding the YouTube channel.
Absolutely.
And Ryan Dirk, the president and CEO of Miracle Hill Ministries here in the Upstate, and Kayla Moore, the women's program manager over in Spartanburg, have been my guests today. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I'm Chris Evans, and this has been Focus on the Upstate.
You've been listening to Focus on the Upstate with Chris Evans. If you would like more information on today's topic, email Chris at cevans@intercom.com.